sometimes you need the really simple stuff. It's like you don't stop biking just because you're getting old. Like, you get old because you stop biking.
3, 2, 1, 0. Welcome to Donuts and Bikes, the mountain biking coaching podcast. Your hosts are Christian and Paul, and we're here to discuss the skills, techniques, and tactics we've used to progress our riders and coaches over the past 20 years to become more skillful and confident, and ultimately have more fun on bikes. So click into a harder gear and get ready to dig deep into some of these skills.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Donuts and Bikes. How you doing, Christian? Good to see you, buddy.
Oh, I am doing fantastic. Good to see you again.
Lovely jubbly. A very rainy day here in Pemberton, which is really nice. It's been a super hot, dry summer. So it's nice to get some rain going. Sweet. How you been? You said you were just telling me you've been playing a lot of guitar lately.
I have been. Yeah. So I've been getting my electric guitar out quite a bit and trying to relearn some things that I learned as a kid.
Oh, nice.
So when I first learned to play guitar, I was really influenced by Hendrix. Yeah. You know, back when I learned to play, the internet didn't exist.
It's a long time ago. Even have cars back then.
They didn't have cars. I guess they had guitars.
Yeah.
But, I had no idea of like, I could listen to it and I could see the tab, but like I was able to pick through like a couple of intros to some of the songs. And I just decided this summer that I was going to pick a couple of things I really wanted to work on. And the thing that really struck me is that how much of music is, it's not what you play, but how you play it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And that's just, I've been fascinated by just playing a few licks of, you know, blues related stuff like that, just with the feel and just trying to explore the tones of that. So it's been really satisfying for sure.
Yeah. You'll have to give Huxley a lesson when you're here next. He's slowly getting into his guitar.
It's so great for kids.
We're getting ready for a Guns N' Roses concert in a few weeks, and he's.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I can't wait. But we got tickets, and they sent us this CD. Which is Guns, like 7 tracks of Guns N' Roses live from like the last few years. And there's some very colorful language on the first song. And he's like, I didn't quite know. I didn't really like think about it. And me and him are playing Paul downstairs, and he's just rocking out to this. I was like, "Woo, buddy, there's some tasty words in here." And he's like, "Yeah, I know, daddy, but as long as I don't say them." I was like, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, buddy. But we sort of have a rule with music that, like, within reason, if it's like quote unquote good music, I don't know what makes good music, but if it's like good music and it has swearing in it, like, that's fine, because it's just, I always got so mad as a kid when like my dad wouldn't let me listen to certain music because there was swearing in it, and I was like, you're preventing me from listening to all this like genre of music and experience what makes for some incredible music and storytelling just because they swear a few times. So I guess I've swung the needle the other way, and I'm like, it doesn't matter within reason.
But that's awesome.
They're not allowed to listen to Eminem yet, but
you've got to draw the line somewhere, right?
I draw the line somewhere.
It's boundaries. Boundaries. Yeah. So is this going to be the first concert?
First concert for... They've been to some outdoor concerts, but nothing like Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Blow his mind.
Yeah. Wow.
Probably blow my mind. I'm a little worried that Axel's going to be rubbish and it's just going to be pants, but because but we'll see. I think it's going to be rad either way.
Well, cool. Hey, this kind of fits into our topic. Bridges the gap between our last episode, which if you haven't listened to, was about kids, you know. And interestingly, Paul, thinking back to the coaching kids episode, we didn't ever really talk about how to coach kids in skills.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's totally really cool. It really highlights the some of the topics surrounding kind of surrounding the actual, the teaching component of what we do.
Yeah. And it's a really common one that we get on the kids module sometimes, is they're coming in and they're expecting all this information like games and exercises and drills and what you teach kids, like what you teach kids is the same, the breaking lesson, a cadence lesson, body position for climbing, whatever it is, the skills are the same.
Right.
It's all the other stuff that changes, like how you talk to them and how you connect with them. And for sure you can come up with some games and drills, but that's not really important if you're not connected with the kids. So yeah, there's a ton of teaching kids that's got very little to do with actual biking skills.
Yeah. So you're thinking about adults and kids sharing music together. And you mentioned a while back this idea of doing an episode on coaching and riding as we get older.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to think about, and I'm really excited to be discussing this with you, because we're not teenagers anymore.
No, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it. I'm so glad I'm not a teenager in today's world. But yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it the other day, like I'm 44 and I'm coaching mountain biking. Still after, you know, I started doing it when I was 19 or whatever I was. And it's a strange feeling, because we're essentially in a career where we don't have that many people, if anyone, really ahead of us in terms of like a whole population of 50 to 60 year old mountain bike coaches to look up to or aspire to or see how they're doing it. So it's a bit of a strange feeling to, from a coach's point of view, to be like, okay, am I going to be, so I'm 44. So I'm not going to change careers suddenly. Am I going to be coaching biking for another 15 plus years until I retire? And it's almost the same conversation with riding. I think like we are starting to get, I mean, that's the cool thing with biking. I think there's a big community of mountain bikers out there well into their 50s, 60s and beyond. So that one's a little easier to kind of visualize and manage how that would look. But even so, I think it's cool to talk about like how are we going to be riding and coaching in the next, you know, as 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s? How does that look as the sport evolves?
Yeah. E-bikes.
E-bikes. Oh, yeah. E-bikes. I'm sure we'll talk about e-bikes at some point.
At some point. Yeah. But no, yeah, you're right. I think there are definitely, you know, people within my world that are riding, you know, that are older than me. But you're right. The coaching side, there aren't a whole lot of examples. I'm sure there's some out there, but yeah.
Yeah. Plenty on the ski side. Like there's a lot of older ski instructors, but very few older snowboard instructors. So I always remember this guy, Frank in Big White. We were going up the Jellif one morning, quick side story. And Frank was skiing down a mogul run, and he's this sort of tiny little Japanese ski instructor, and he must have been like 72, 73 at the time. And he hits this bump, double ejects, and like James Bond kind of cartoon style, like head over tail, like pretty much catapults the entire way down this run. And we were all like, Frank's dead. Like that's it. There's no way
he's coming back.
There's no, like he's 74 or whatever he was. I was like,
oh no,
there's just no way he's alive. So we like got off the chair, rushed down to him. And at that point, by the time we get down to him, he's like hiking back up to grab his skis. And we're just like, if that was me, I was like 20 at the time or 22 or whatever it was. I was like, holy cow, Frank, like that is insane. Like to be that old and still that kind of resilient and robust and strong. It was, yeah, we went from being pretty convinced Frank was dead to like, holy shit, Frank's a legend. Like, I wow. think he took the afternoon off and then he was back the next day teaching skiing. And it's still to this day, one of the gnarliest bales I've ever seen. Like wow. crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty cool. Anyway.
It's good to have aspirational people beyond our own ages. I think that's been something that I found super helpful for me as an educator and outdoor person, you know, for 30 years or so. So, hey, in this episode, we're going to talk about coaching and riding, you know, in age, and we can approach this in a lot of different ways. And I think the first logical point, just to kind of bridge off where we left off last time, was talking about learning a bit.
Yeah.
And what are some key differences between the way adults learn, way kids learn?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, you said it earlier, but I think just before we hit record, but a phrase I hear quite a lot is this sort of neuroplasticity and this ability to take on new information. And I think that's a nice place to start with just the development of brains and where they're at. But with kids, essentially, they're still learning the programs. They're still building the wiring. They're still learning fundamental skills. And they're in a place with their brain where they can, it's easier to create new links and new neural pathways to build new skills, essentially, and to increase their knowledge. Whereas I find with adults, it's almost like a lot of those pathways are set. So it's a bit like building a city, like all the roads are already built. And if you want to change a road from point A to point B, you've got to, it's way harder. Whereas if the city isn't built yet, you can kind of put the roads wherever you want and you can, it's easier to kind of build. So I always think of that kind of city building analogy where, and with the adult, it's like the roads are concrete, they're in. And if you want to change them, you've got to get out the concrete diggers and hammer away. So essentially, long story short, the adults can, you know, we're talking in general terms here, but generally speaking, adults find it harder to adapt and learn a new skill. Hence the old adage, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, which are, there are definitely times where I have certainly felt that, where I'm like, nope, to like learning to surf. Holy shit. Every time I go out on that stupid piece of foam, I'm like, I'm just too old for this. Like, I can't do it. And then I get really frustrated. And then I sit there, and as a coach, I'm like, no, I can learn new things. I can learn new skills. Like, it's physically possible for me to do this. And then I go back out there, and then I get swamped again. And then, so it's just this endless cycle. But old dogs can learn new tricks. It's just harder.
If you told me this over and over again, I still cannot believe the story. Like, I just can't see you not surfing.
I suck at it so much. It's a stupid sport. But I really want to do it. So I'm just constantly at war with myself.
Wow.
Anyway.
Hey, I have a thought here. Let's sidetrack for just a second from your city analogy. And I really, really like that analogy. But we've both been riding bikes, so I would dare to say for most of our lives now at this point, mountain bikes or BMX bikes or whatever. What have you noticed personally that's changed in your riding over the years? Like, is there anything that like you could point to, like in my 40s, this changed, or I don't do this like I did anymore?
It's funny. Like, yeah, I'm 44 and I think I'm riding, in some ways I'm riding better than I ever have. In other ways, I'm not riding as well as I have in the past. But for me right now, it's technically, I think I'm better than I ever have been. I think mentally, I'm not as strong as I have been in the past. That's always been my weakness anyway. But I don't know, to pick an example, like I'm my body position and my ability to manage my stability and balance whilst riding. I think that skill is the one skill I work on the most in my riding, and that I think is better than it ever has been. But and jumping, like I'm pretty comfortable on big jumps now, which I never had in my 20s or 30s. But yeah, what about you? What a, because you still shred. Like every time I see you ride, and I'm like, and for me, you're a few years further on than me.
Yeah, I just had a birthday.
Not that many, only a couple.
No, just a couple. Yeah. But
I'm like, it's funny riding with you because you're like 5 years older than me. But then it's like, well, if Christian's doing it, then I literally have no excuse. So I'm like, shit, Christian's getting better. And that means if he's getting better, then I definitely can still get better.
Well, I had this, somebody asked me the other day, you know, it's like, well, somebody had been riding with me for quite a while. And they're like, you seem to always be progressing. And like, yeah, I feel like, you know, I just turned 52. So yeah. Like doing the math is like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know,
Really? Holy shit. I thought you just turned 50.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just turned 52.
Holy cow. Man.
Which sat like just saying those words out loud always just like blows my mind. Like I can't believe
that. Yeah, I don't believe that. I'm going to have to check your birth certificate.
But I would, by the kind of response to that is like, man, I love to ride. I just really, yeah. I enjoy everything about it, the process. And it's one of those things that, like many things that where you, when you put your attention into it, you can get better at it. You know, yeah. And there is a point obviously with age where that's not going to be always true, but I definitely feel I have more fun on my bike now than I ever have.
Yeah, totally. Me, I think of the word motivation, like, as long as I'm motivated to get better, I think I will get better, regardless of age.
Exactly.
Probably up to a point. There'll probably be a point where physically it will be harder. But if I want to get better, I think I'll still get better.
Yeah. And I think, and we'll get into this, so I don't want to sidetrack us too much, but, you know, how we set our goals as we age, I think really matters and has immediate consequences for us. And we'll talk about that later, but you know, as people get older, like your priorities and what you're riding can change. And I think recognizing that is one of the first tools is that like you can keep riding for as long as you really want to. It's just a matter of like, what is it you're trying to do? On your bike and how are you going to figure out ways to support that?
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, like the things that excite me now is still like technical trails. Jumping is still, it's still something that I keep exploring. And one of the secrets for me is having younger people I ride with that inspire me.
Yeah.
You know, that's been a really important piece to this.
It's funny you say that. Like I've almost felt the opposite in recent years where like if someone's younger than me and they do something, I'm kind of like, yeah, well, they're younger than me. So it doesn't inspire me in the same way. Like I'm way more inspired by my friends that are better than me, but older than me. Like you and David, Simon, like, I mean, yeah, if I could. Because to me it's like, well, they're doing it and they're older, so for me it's like that's way more inspiring than like some 25 year old kid doing a massive whip. I'm like, well, they're 25, so who cares?
They're supposed to do a massive whip.
They're supposed to do it, so it doesn't really, you know.
But I guess maybe I'm, to be real honest here, by my boys that I ride with, you know, and just watching them progress.
Oh, yeah.
You know, absolutely inspirational for me just to try to, you know.
Yeah. Well, in a sense, that's kind of cool. Because like, if you look at, sure, they're younger, but they've been riding for way less time. So that, for me, that's where a younger person is inspirational. It's like, wow, they've been riding like for less time than I've been alive and they're better than me. Like, so clearly something's happened in their skill progression that hasn't happened in mine. Like, and that's where I definitely get inspiration from younger riders. It's like, especially when it's like, I'm 21. I'm like, holy shit. Like I've been riding bikes before you were born.
Right.
But then they're better than me. So it's like, ah, wow, that's really cool. That's a really cool concept.
Well, yeah, but you have to recognize that, you know, somebody that's been started riding bikes 10 years ago is benefiting from an amazing amount of technology, not just in the bikes, but in the trail building knowledge.
Yeah. It's just a different sport.
It really is. And I mean that in a really wonderful way. Like I'm not the grumpy old guys. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I love all kinds of trails.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's rad.
Good times on bikes.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into some ideas here. And I think the city analogy is super cool, and maybe kind of pair that up with this idea of a hard drive in terms of capacity to both learn information or take in information and actually do something with it, right? Which is kind of the performance end. Because I think, as opposed to what we talked about with the kids episode, kind of focusing in on the performance side here for adults. And the whole idea of this hard drive analogy, and I want you to add what we talked about a second ago, but the kids have a lot more space in this hypothetical hard drive. Right. Yeah. So there's a lot more information that can come into it. It's easier for them, you know, it's this neuroplasticity. They're really learning like how to organize it and put things into context. And then when I was explaining or talking to you about that, you had an idea that there are other layer, like their hard drives smaller too. Can you maybe elaborate on what you mean by that?
All right. So for me, it was kind of a concept where any human brain has kind of a finite amount of storage space, like, I don't know, 1,000 terabytes, or obviously it's more than that, but it's got this finite amount of space. And for adults, a lot of that space kind of utilized, taken up, allocated, whereas kids, you know, especially younger kids, there's large sections of that storage space that they haven't unlocked yet. It's almost like you can't, you know, unlock sections 11 to 100 until you unlock sections 1 to 10. So in a way, they have the potential for more space, but as the way they build their knowledge and build their learning patterns and neural pathways, like, they're still, it's almost like you're building the center of the city before you build the greater center of the city, before you build the first suburbs and then the further suburbs. Like, it's got building each little piece at a time. So in a way, kids have more room, more space for new information. But I think in the other sense, also small things can take up a lot of space. So a bad breakfast, an argument with a sibling, something another kid said, it can suddenly overwhelm them. So I think kids can really flip-flop from like having loads of space ready to learn, ready to take on new skills, to almost like the hard drive shuts down and they can't learn at all. In that sense, I feel like adults are a bit more stable. Like, the hard drive is set, the pathways are set. It can still take on new information, but there isn't much room left. But the whole landscape, if you like, of the hard drive is more established, more stable. So it creates a fairly consistent type of learner. So each adult will have kind of basically a set of behaviors that will repeat themselves. Hence, that's where their personality comes from, where every time they try and learn something, they shut down and get frustrated. Or every time they learn something, they stay calm and they break down, they stay patient. Like, they'll have those habits, those habitual behaviors. Whereas kids can be a bit more erratic. Sometimes they're amazing, and then sometimes they're a nightmare, and then sometimes they're something in between. But yeah, I think understanding as an adult, like, if you're finding something hard to learn, why is that happening? And it's really a function of your place in your life and your neuroplasticity. Essentially, as we get older, it's harder to build new roads. It's not impossible. We can totally do it. It just requires more purposeful practice, more patience, and that's a good place to kind of start, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that this pathway as an adult. The habits, I think, is a really interesting piece here. Is we basically develop habits in our day to day routines that have a lot of shortcuts, so we don't have to go down every street, so to speak. In your analogy, yeah. You know, we figured out how to get to point A to point B very, very efficiently, and sometimes that action leaves out all these other streets, other ways of thinking about something that we didn't find useful at the time, that then may it come back to us, keep us from learning something, or you know, keep us from wanting to be open to learn. And so, in a lot of ways, I think about, you know, the hard drive example is there's a lot of files, and you know, within my brain, you know, or in anybody else's brain, that some are going to be serve us really well, and some we may need to let go of. Mm-hmm. You know, almost like the idea of deleting them, you know, so that we can open up more space.
You could probably let go of a couple of donut hard drives.
Couple donut. Exactly. They take up a lot of space.
Yeah. Need less space taken up by donuts. Yeah, totally. No, I like that idea. And the other thing I was thinking as you were talking too is like, adults get very comfortable with what's established, right? Like the roads are built, the city's built, and we get comfortable with that. We get comfortable with knowing what we know and being able to do what we can do, because that's the whole point of learning, is to get better at things and then to learn them. And then in a sense, the whole point of learning is at some point to stop learning, because then you've learnt it, whatever it was that what you've done.
Well, on that note, to add another word here is that learning is change. And we've spoken on that in previous podcasts, but in a lot of ways, as an adult, we don't want change anymore.
That's it, right? Where the kids are kind of used to it, like their brain's a little bit more chaotic, and they're comfortable with being uncomfortable because they're constantly learning. Like they're constantly aware that, oh, I don't know this, or I can't do this. I mean, that's literally like growing up in a nutshell, is constantly learning, because you don't know everything, you can't do everything. Whereas the adults, we've kind of gone through that, so we get really, you know, kind of rubbish at being uncomfortable. We get rubbish at being in that position to learn something.
Well, there's so much structurally in our life, our day-to-day lives, that keep us comfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, in our routines, you know, going to work, you know, whatever it is, having all these structures that we create that keeps us insulated from any sort of like new experience.
Yeah. That's why I think we all love mountain biking, because it's constantly giving us an outlet to recognize that we haven't finished learning it yet. So as an adult, like we're constantly, every time we go on a bike, we're constantly in that environment of like, we're slightly uncomfortable, we're not as good as we could be. We realize there's something we could learn. Like, it's kind of like the kids going to school every week. They're constantly in an environment where they're like, oh, I'm not sure, I haven't mastered this yet, I need to learn it. And every time we get on the bike, it's kind of the same. I think that's why biking in your 40s and 50s and beyond, like it, I think that's exactly why it helps keep us young, not just physically, but mentally. It keeps that neuroplasticity going, because we're constantly having to learn or assess or think about new skills.
I agree. And I think that I would add that mountain biking can do that. I'm not sure that it always does.
I think that's fair.
Sometimes we get into routines and comfort within the biking that we do. Mm-hmm. We're always riding the same trail at the same speed, making the same decision, you know, the same decisions.
Buying a new bike.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, my background, you know, is, as you know, Paul, and I think folks have been listening, is in outdoor experiential education. And, you know, one of the premises of that kind of concept is that growth mindset, never stops.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just something that is foundational. I think for our lives is that we keep growing, we keep learning. And I think any time that we get into these habits and we stagnate, and it everything around us supports that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sometimes you'll be around people where that's happened, you know, for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, for 4 years. And all of a sudden they're in a situation that those roads are, you know, not just asphalt and concrete, but there's metal barriers around them too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And like, you know, if you link like your mental health to, you know, along your life plan, I guess, or whatever you want to call it, like from my experience, you know, that the people in their 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s that are the happiest are the ones that have that growth mindset, whether they're aware of it or not. They're going surfing every year and they're trying to learn to surf, or they're playing the guitar and they're learning the guitar. Like they're an adult, but they're constantly still learning, because usually that learning builds passion and motivation, which I think are two huge pieces to our mental health. Any riders out there that are listening that are maybe starting to think, oh, I'm too old for this, or this is too hard, I guess what we're saying here is you're not, you're just not. And it sounds like a really simple thing to say, but sometimes you need the really simple stuff. It's like, you don't stop biking just because you're getting old. Like, you get old because you stop biking. I think of some of the injuries and some of the struggles I've gone through in the last few years that I've had. And it's really easy to take the low hanging fruit and be like, this is happening because I'm getting old. But the worst injuries I've ever had, and repetitive injuries, were I had in my 20s. I had like a major concussion and broken shoulder. Then 6 months later, a broken collarbone. Then another 6 months later, a broken pelvis. And then another 6 months later, it was a different shoulder. It was like, and they were all kind of ridiculous accidents. It was either BMX or snowboarding or mountain biking, but they were kind of stupid accidents that happened because I was young and I was inexperienced. So I was probably just making silly decisions. So yeah, if you get in having issues, you're finding challenges in your 40s, 50s, wherever you're at in your life, it's easy to just blame your age, but it's not your age. It's just that's happening at that age, but it's not the age.
Yeah. And I think to add to this, the way in which we think about things changes the actual thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You can talk yourself in and out of anything, right?
Right. But that idea, and we've all heard it over and over, I'm too old for this.
Yeah.
You know, and like, as soon as we start, we may not fully believe it, but like, if we're saying that and thinking it, then that's going to impact our choices and our decision and you know, make us kind of back away from that. And there's we started classes again here at the university, and I've been teaching on leisure theory right now. And there's a theory called reversal theory. And basically says that our human behavior and performance is inherently inconsistent, and that we reverse between ways we think about things. And example of that is like biking. In one moment for us, maybe we may think about it as being very playful. Yeah. And then the next day we may get really serious about it and want to develop a skill or, you know, ride a specific trail or whatever. But we go back and forth between how we think about, you know, at one particular activity. And what's fascinating to me about this idea is that it's not that we do reverse. I don't think that's anything that's new, but again, it just reinforces the idea that the way we think about it is what's actually changing it. Yeah. So, you know, if that's true, as you said, that's like seemingly overly simple. But then if it's simple, then it's something that we have like immediate access to.
Yeah. And you have kind of, in a way, you have a degree of control over it. And it's just believing that sometimes things are that simple. Like, you know, it's I've struggled with my confidence on steep terrain the last few years. Like, really struggled with it to the point where I'm like not riding it and avoiding it. And so naturally it's like, I'm not, you know, I'm just getting too old. I just can't deal with the risk. But then, so it's really easy to go straight to the age, but then you kind of dig deeper and you look past it and you're like, actually what's happening is I'm just busy and I don't have a lot of bandwidth for anything extra. And this riding this steep terrain is just requiring too much bandwidth. So it's not that I'm old, it's just that I'm busy.
Right.
And so I'm just trying to, you know, really be objective about my self-analysis. And it's like, okay, if I can create a bit more bandwidth here or there, then I'll have more resilience to deal with that stress or deal with that risk when I go into that steeper terrain. And that's the cause and effect. It's not my age that's causing it.
Right.
Which has been, for me, it's been really helpful because now I can problem solve. Because you can't problem, if you're just like, well, I'm getting old, you can't change your age.
Exactly, right.
And you can't stop your aging. So you can't problem solve. So if you blame it on the age, then you literally have no way to find a solution.
Yeah. And I mean, what you're speaking about here is self-awareness in this case, right? And so as soon as you can name something like this, then you can do something about it.
Yeah.
Right. Can you improve your self-awareness in the situation? Yes. And acknowledging that you've been busy and had this bandwidth capacity that's prevented you from, you know, writing a lot of steeper stuff, then you can go easy on yourself about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have been busy. So I've been doing these other things. It's not, like you said, it's not because I'm old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's all about life decisions and choices, right? And then what you prioritize. You know, it, for me, it kind of speaks to like, it's just those self-limiting behaviors that we've kind of talked about or touched on. It's finding the genuine cause of what the challenge is. And then usually often or not, it's not your age, it's something else. And if we just label the age, then we limit. You know, I think as soon as you label the age as the cause, you've limited not just what you can do on a bike. I mean, it's the other way of looking at it. If you're saying I'm too old to bike, what else are you saying you're too old for? Like that will trickle into lots of life choices and patterns in your life from there on out. You know, are you too old to go on a roller coaster ride if you take your grandkids to Disney? Like, no. The last one I went on, actually, that reminds me. We were at Universal. We went up this giant tower of, like, thing, this roller coaster ride. And you're literally, like, going up a vertical thing. And just at the very top before it flips over and then goes all the way down and does the big, you know, classic, like, dive on the roller coaster. Summer looks at me, my daughter, and says, Daddy, I don't want to be on this. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you dragged me on this. I'm like worried that my back's gonna break out. And just before we get to the top, she's like, Daddy, I don't want to be on this. And I was like, too late now.
Right, we're in it. Like,
we're in it. But yeah, I mean, again, that was just a mindset, you know. I was like, oh, I'm not sure if I should go on that. Like, getting a bit old for those things. Like, no, like, it's just negative self-talk. You're just limiting yourself and it's not necessary. Thanks for listening, everyone. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. If you want to learn more about us, please check out our first info episode, which digs into who we are, what we do, and our background in the coaching and mountain bike industry. You can also check us out on Instagram at Donuts and Bikes, or our podcast website is the Mountain Bike Coaching Podcast.buzzsprout.com. All right, back to the show.
Yeah, I think that, you know, within that negative self-talk, we can add in some other components here of performance, just in the spirit of like naming things, because I think it's helpful. So emotional IQ is what we're talking about here with this self-awareness, you know, having this more global understanding of how our being is impacting ourselves and the other people that we're around, you know, through our decision making, as you mentioned, how we're interacting with others, how we relate, how we're regulating ourselves, what we say, what we don't say, in situations, you know, and empathy, like we talked about in the last episode as well. So I think that's a really important concept to try to become more aware of, as you know, for adults, is to identify those pieces and how they're unfolding on a day-to-day basis.
What are some things you do for that self-awareness piece? Because I feel like a lot of that emotional IQ, like, it starts with that awareness, and then like the decision making or the self-regulation or the empathy, they kind of they follow on from that. Like, what are some things you've done in the past that have helped with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, self-awareness for me starts with needs, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to, you know, identify in the moment, you know, whether I'm coaching, you know, or writing, from just personally writing. But you know, what's going on with my needs right now? What, you know, being honest with that. And that helps me then to kind of become more centered within how I am existing in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, so if it's a coaching day, and if it's, you know, it's going to be a full day, you know, my needs are going to, you know, I might have to verbalize to myself, I need to pace myself today. It's day one of a level two course or whatever. And yeah, there's a lot of information coming from me. I need to really monitor my pace with how I'm presenting information, you know, engaging yeah. responses and whatnot. And honestly, I had a day recently that I had something scheduled every hour for about 10 hours. And I did this thing, and I'm like, I'm going to try this and see what impact it has. Cause I've had days like that before, and I got to the end of it, like crawling across the finish line.
Yeah.
And this time I'm like, man, I've got like three different bags of different things that I'm doing today. Got mountain biking, teaching, trail building, meetings, et cetera, and all these different like things I have to do. Like, I'm going to stage water in every single thing I'm going to need to do, like in this yeah. bag, so that I would consciously like drink water purposefully, like throughout the day, you know, and just yeah. having that self-awareness where, like, when that doesn't happen, you know, how that impacts, you know, my thinking and yeah. everything.
That's neat.
Yeah. And it worked out. I was really impressed with myself for making yeah. it happen, because usually it's not like that for me.
Well, that's a big piece of self-awareness is you can then coach yourself, and then, like any coach would, you can be proud of yourself.
Right.
And I think that's a cool piece. Like, for one tool I use for self-awareness is I stand outside of myself, and I try and look at myself as someone else. So, you know, the analogy that pops to mind is like, you know, in the ER, when someone dies on the bed and then their body floats above them and they're kind of looking down on themselves. So I don't quite go to that lens. It's not that morbid, but I really kind of, if I'm riding a trail, I try and visualize watching myself ride the trail. Or if I'm just sitting in my office and I'm feeling down one day, I visualize myself looking at me at my desk and looking at how I feel. And I think being outside of yourself and looking at yourself in that sense from another place, I think that really helps you just be kind and helps you understand yourself with less judgment and fewer emotions. And it can just help you look at yourself like you might just look at another person. You know, if yep. there's someone you don't know and you're just watching them hanging out in their house, or you're watching them, well, that sounds creepy, doesn't it? you know what I mean, though? You're watching them do a task or something, then it, you know, you're just watching them objectively. You have no prejudice, no premonitions, no judgment. You're just watching someone and thinking, oh, I wonder why they're doing that. Or, oh, I wonder why that's the way that is. And so it's... That's the trick that I try and use that helps improve my self-awareness.
Yeah. And I think another word that comes to mind there is curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, like have that, and that's kind of what you're talking about there is like, how do I look from the outside?
Exactly.
What would it be like if that's a good way to approach it for sure. And I think as much as the self-awareness happens for us, or we as much as we become conscious of that, we can also like highlight how we talk to ourselves.
Yeah.
As well as like the stories that we tell ourselves.
Yeah.
In this, and oftentimes we don't tell our stories to ourselves when things go well. Like when we accomplish something that we want to do, it's just like we did it. It's high fives and we feel good.
Yeah.
But then when something doesn't, when it's not going to our plan, or we get frustrated or whatever, we can start to tell ourselves stories to make up excuses for, for what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's an easy trap to fall into, right? So you're trying to, often as humans, we'll try and find the easiest reason why, you know, why can't I do it? Well, what's the lowest hanging fruit? Well, I'm too old, you know, or my back hurts and I had a bad sleep last night. You just start finding all these sort of telling all these little stories, which creates a dialogue, right? It creates a pattern of thinking. I mean, and this is really why people go and see counselors and psychologists, is to help adjust those patterns of behavior and those patterns of thought. Like, you know, you look at some of those super successful people, you know, whether it's like entrepreneurs or, you know, people on Wall Street or whatever sort of analogy or example you want to think of. But usually successful people are very good at the positive affirmation.
Right.
You know, they avoid that cognitive dissonance where they're kind of making up stories and trying to find easy reasons why they can't do it. You know, it's that positive affirmation. It's like, this is what I want to do. How do I do it? Am I good enough to do it? Yep, I have the skills. And that constitutes a pattern of thought. And then, and like any skill, if you repeat it, it becomes autonomous. But if you repeat that negative train of thought, then the, I can't do that, or I'm not good enough for that, or I'm too old for that, or my back's too sore for that. You keep doing that, you'll start doing it autonomously without realizing that you're doing it. And that's where the self-awareness needs to come in, because you need to realize what patterns you are repeating from a decision-making, self-affirmation sense. Because then once you have that awareness of what you're repeating, for good or bad, you can then, like any skill, you can then try and work on changing it. All of this stuff's easier said than done. It's like, hey, just stay centered on the bike. It's super easy. It's actually really hard to stay centered on the bike if the terrain's gnarly. It's kind of the same in your life. If your life is hectic and busy, it's really hard to perform a basic skill of being kind to yourself and talking positively about yourself. That's hard if your bandwidth is full. So every time your bandwidth is full, your weaknesses, your habits will come up. It's just like in biking. You get on a gnarly trail, your bad habits will come out. You'll sit in the back seat, you'll get too tense, and you can't, you know, you're just on survival mode, right? And that's what's going to happen mentally as well, I think. We're getting digging into the mental side quite a lot there, but.
Well, no, I think it's appropriate though. I mean, I think the underpinnings of this are all mental in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's like, and I would argue even like the physical component, like the fitness component, I think there's an underlying mental piece to that as well. For instance, and this just got another part here, is our lifestyles that we live as adults.
Hmm.
And meaning that kind of the day-to-day decisions that we're making about how we structure our day, you know, are we going to, if we have extra 15 minutes here and there, are we going to spend that on YouTube watching cat videos, or are we going to spend it reading or meditating or, you know, whatever? But there's all these decisions that create our lifestyle.
Right. Yeah.
And with nutrition and our own fitness as well as part of this, becoming self-aware of how we're choosing to create our lifestyle then can either close off bandwidth or open it up.
Yeah, totally.
For learning. And that's something that we have control over to a degree. You know, yeah. even folks that are, you know, clocking in and working 8 or 9 hours a day, yeah, there is a little bit, there's probably a little autonomy in there that we can take control over.
Yeah, for sure. And like, as you're talking, it kind of reminds me of like when I go back home to the UK and I see other family or friends back there, it's like in any walk of life, any country we live in, we are all guilty of often not knowing what we don't know. And in your life, everyone kind of gets into their own bubble. I get my own bubble for sure. And, you know, when I go back to the UK, I see how they eat and drink, and they're just their general physical fitness in their 40s and 50s. It's so much lower than where I live in Whistler and Pemberton and my friends over here. But they don't know it because it's not part of the culture. So right. It's not like there's a bunch of people living next door living a totally different lifestyle. So they can't see it. So they don't have that self-awareness. And then, you know, they're all wondering why, like, a bunch of friends in the UK that are my age, like mid to late 40s, they look like they're mid to late 50s. And it's just because it's like, oh, you go to the pub two nights a week. You drink most evenings after work. You maybe run once every 2 weeks. You go on a bike ride every month. Like, it's just a totally, you know, whereas I'm like, I only really drink if friends come round for dinner or something. I don't really drink. I'm on my bike at least 3 days a week. You know, it's just knowing, being aware of what you don't know and then being able to change that. I think the biggest thing for riding bikes and mountain biking as we get into our 30s, 40s and 50s is you have to be realistic. Like, you can't fool yourself. You can't start making up stories and coming up with excuses for why not to bike. Like, your body isn't as strong and malleable as it was. So you have to eat better. You have to sleep better. You have to do some strength and mobility and keep your body in good shape. And then you can bike. I mean, there's so many like 50 to 60 year olds in Whistler that kick my butt, like, because they're kind of semi-retired or whatever, and they're just riding all the time, and they're like, they've ridden all their lives, and they're crazy fit and crazy strong. And so for me, I'm lucky in this environment that I get to see outside of my personal bubble, and I see these other people, and I'm like, holy cow, well, geez, if they're climbing the NIMBY 50 in that time at the age of 56, like, holy cow.
I would think if we gathered those folks up and talked to them about this topic, and I bet one thing that we would hear across those folks is, probably they all have something that's inspiring them to in their writing. Yeah. It's something that's very unique in its motivation. But I think you can sense that with individuals that are stoked on writing. It's because they've found something that's it's giving to them. And just like a concrete example here is, you know, learning something new that within your writing, you know, just whether it's wheeling for a very long distance or manualing or whatever, or, you know, creating style and jumps, like those things are like long-term process that require a lot of work and a lot of time in the saddle and a lot of reason to keep at it, you know, but for the other people, it might be long distance riding.
Yeah.
You know, working up to do 4 and 5 hour rides.
Yeah.
Or longer or whatever.
Totally. Just being on that bike. Like, I have a neighbor that she rides a lot and she's retired, and she doesn't really have any other goals than she just loves being on her bike, and she just rides all the time and she shreds. And it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier in the podcast. It's like the self-limiting, the self-regulation. Like, I think if you've got that awareness and you pick one component, like the physical, you know, if you can work on that physical, that's an active sign that you're not self-limiting. And that's a pattern that you've got into. So then maybe you can do that with some psychological things like anxiety or motivation. Like all of these things are trainable. You just need to be aware of A, what you're doing already, and B, aware that you can change it. It might take longer. It might be harder as we get older to change habits, to change skills, to learn new skills, but it is possible. I think the physical piece, in a way, I feel like the physical piece is the easiest one because there's so many ways to improve that physical component. You know, get a trainer, go to the gym, ride more. There's so much information. Download an app, like,
yeah,
eat well. Like that's the one, and we can see it too. I like it because you can see it. Like if I eat badly and I don't ride, I feel it. If I eat well and I do ride, I feel it.
I think maybe to wrap us up here, an idea that to summarize or to bring this full circle on the riding side, looking at riding in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, I think we just outlined a really good reason that folks of our age should hire a coach.
Yeah, totally.
Work with the coach. I mean, there's, you know, a good coach that has experience with working with an older population, it can make a huge difference. You know, if somebody's struggling to find the motivation to, you know, to find the time to do it or what fitness or whatever, it'd be a super easy thing to do because there's coaches all over the place now.
Yeah, totally. And I think, I mean, that's the perfect example of even why you want to coach into your 30s, 40s, and 50s. Because like for me, because I'm still coaching, like I'm constantly in that mindset of how can I do this better and what can I do and improve. So regardless of my coaching, just the fact that I'm teaching others helps me stay in that mindset myself for my riding. But also I think it's just cool. Like we're seeing so many more students every year that are older. Some are showing up on e-bikes, some aren't showing up on e-bikes and still shred. But yeah, I think, the more efficient you can get, because that's the key thing with riding in your 40s and 50s. At some point, you have to have the technique at a place where you can really show efficiency and flow, like, because it's the efficiency that helps the physical piece, right? Like if you're not efficient and you're riding in your 50s and 60s, it's going to hurt and you're probably going to get hurt and it's going to get tiring. So tidying up the technique with a coach is, bang on.
Sweet. Well, Paul, this has been fun. I really enjoyed the kids and adults kind of double episode here.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I think it's cool. And I think for the coaches, just quickly, like if you're coaching in your 40s and 50s, like I think a good place to go with it is it helps understand yourself and your own riding for sure. But I think it can be unnerving being a coach at this age and then being left with like, I mentioned it earlier, like, so am I going to do this for another 10, 15 years? Even if you're just doing it part-time, like, but I think there's a lot to be said. Like, if you're in your mid-40s or 50s and you're coaching mountain biking regularly still, isn't that cool?
Like, yeah, totally.
Isn't that cool? And the fact that we're in a position where we can do that and we don't need to aspire for anything greater. We don't need to aspire necessarily to the next level of certification or whatever it might be. It's just being able to maintain what we've learned up until this point. There's a lot of value in that. And I think the same as a rider, like you don't always have to be progressing and pushing and learning more and achieving more, but shifting your mindset from, like, I sometimes think of it like shifting away, not so much shifting away, but kind of shifting away from a growth mindset to a happy to maintain mindset. Because sometimes sometimes we feel like we're aging because we're not growing, we're not progressing, we're not getting better. Well, you know what? There's a lot of value, intrinsic value in just not getting worse. You know, if I'm getting, if 10 years from now, 15 years from now, I haven't got worse, either as a coach or as a rider, and I'm still enjoying it as much as I am now, then that's a huge win. So I've gradually sort of, both as a rider and as a coach, I've kind of started to shift towards more of a maintaining, happy to maintain mindset. And it's helping me put less pressure on myself as a rider or less pressure on myself as a coach. And it's helping me relax and enjoy things more and actually sort of embrace the aging a little bit, you know, and shift gears from always trying to build to just like, you know, I'm happy just to maintain, because what I have is on the bike is pretty good. What I have as a coach is pretty good. And if I can just maintain it, game on, that'd be awesome.
That's awesome. Let's end it there. It's wonderful. Donuts. Oh,
donuts. Let's do it. Donuts. So I have a good one unless you've got one.
Let's hear it.
Okay, cool. So this one is thank you to my wife, Shannon, for being the best wife ever. But she, Huxley's birthday was in the summer and he wanted a Harry Potter cake. And it's from a Harry Potter cookbook. And it's basically a pile of donuts. It's just a pile of jam donuts, like all stacked up into like a pyramid, with like sweet and sour gummy worms all over it. And anyway, wow. So we'd never made donuts before, and Shannon was like, oh, maybe I'll learn how to make donuts. So the cool thing is she made a batch of fresh donuts the day before to like test.
Good.
So me and Huxley, like, she made these donuts, and Shannon's a pretty amazing cook. I haven't never made them before, but she made the jam from the raspberries from the garden. So shout out to my wife here, obviously. But the first batch came out of the oven, still slightly warm. She put the jam in them that was still slightly warm from like cooling down from making the jam. And me and Huxley were just like, I don't know where Summer was. I guess I have no idea where my daughter was, but we just chowed down on these donuts. They were so good. I ate three straight away. Huxley ate two because they were so soft and fresh. And then the best thing was we got to do it all again the next day because she made another batch for the birthday party.
Oh, it's perfect.
So it's, I guess the donut of the week is my wife's donuts, but she hasn't made any since, which I'm a little bit sad about, but. We'll have to come up with an occasion for her to make some more donuts. But yeah, so if you're around my place and you know the magic word, maybe we'll get some donuts going. Thank you to Harry Potter for that one. Harry Potter fans out there.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show and that it sparked some ideas for your riding and your coaching. As always, our approach to coaching is on pros and cons, not rights and wrongs. And with that in mind, our podcast is meant to be more of a conversation about topics and techniques rather than a final say in how to ride or how to teach. As always, please take care of using or applying any of the techniques discussed in this podcast. Stay safe, ride smart, and we'll see you next time.